looking at our lives, how am I aligned with the life I want to live today? And do I feel I'm in progress to how I want to participate? And there's no right or wrong way to live anyone's lives. As long as we're clear on what our core values are and we're living in integrity to what we say our core values are, that's a big check-in. I value family. All right, well, how much time do you spend with family? What kind of experiences do you have with your family? I value my health and well-being. How do you care for your body? Like, let's just check in. These are ways to start creating feedback loops in for ourselves and our own progress.
Welcome to Potent, the podcast where we explore transformative ideas and practices to help you live into your unique potential and build a more potent life. I'm your host, Stephen Lawson, a whole person productivity coach and the founder of Monk Manual. Today, I'm joined by my friend, Chris Yonker, a speaker, coach, founder of the Center of Conscious Living and Fulfillment, and the host of the popular podcast, Secret Thoughts of CEOs. Through Chris's executive coaching, he specializes in helping family enterprises navigate the intricate and unique aspects of both being related and owning a business. Drawing upon more than 25 years of driving change and leading sales with 3M, and over a decade in family business and executive consulting, Chris helps clients move beyond the obstacles family organizations face that often prevent them from leading deeply fulfilling lives, both individually as well as collectively. I first connected with Chris through the Monk Manual, and I'm excited to connect him with you now. On today's episode, Chris and I talk about the development of wisdom and how Chris has come to find what matters most in life and help others to do the same. I think you'll find this episode remarkably engaging, as Chris is a man who really leads with his heart and spirit. Perfect glance into one individual's pursuit of being a more potent version of oneself. This podcast is brought to you by the Monk Manual. The Monk Manual is dedicated to providing best-in-class tools for helping you build a more potent life and experience peaceful being and purposeful doing on a daily basis. If you'd like to be more intentional with your time and energy, please visit monkmanual.com. All right, let's dive in. We've connected a number of times in the past, and you've been one of those quiet background supporters of the Monk Manual from very, very early on. And I've always enjoyed the conversations we've had, and for what I sense is your heart for things and even your vision for things. But I'd love to have you share a little bit about your journey to now. You work in coaching. I know you work with a lot of individuals who are going through maybe transitioning out of a family business or figuring out what the plan might be there. But you also have this big emphasis on focusing on the whole person, conscious living, on fulfillment. It's not just about, hey, this is Chris Yonker's school for succeeding in just one aspect of life. So I'd love to hear what brought you to that. Could we start with that?
So I've been studying Thomas Hubel, and he's someone who's really mastered teaching folks how to work through trauma with spirituality and science. And I think we all have some level of trauma in our past, whether it be epigenetic or from our own experiences, whether big T or little T. For me, I was raised in a dual-alcoholic home. It was an extremely volatile environment, explosive at times. I was sexually molested also when I was younger, not from my parents, but someone else. Then add in a massive amount of bullying. I became a huge target. So by the time I'm 13, 14, maybe seventh, eighth grade, whatever that is, I was pretty much a hot mess. I really struggled with a lot. Now, why do I say all this? Well, there's always someone out in the audience who resonates with that type of story, so I'll put that out there. But I found there was a time, third grade maybe, I felt that God was available and able to talk to me. I was an only child. I really didn't have anyone to go to. It was really cool. So there's this space, I'd created space and had this dialogue, and it was really powerful to me. And though I was raised as a Catholic, I never really had that level of experience. A lot of the folks in my family were checking boxes. We go to Mass on Sundays, what we do. It was like a going through the motions. So it didn't really seem to be any type of integration. You bless the food before dinner, and then we don't talk about it again until tomorrow night. We bless the food before dinner, and we don't talk about it again until we go to Mass, and what Mass are we going to? So I always believed that there was something greater. I honestly don't know where it came from. I've always been a voracious reader, but I started studying books like What to Say When You Talk to Yourself by Helmstetter when I was like 12, 13. Like I would go to the library and I'd check out books on something around spirituality, around development. I started studying and I realized the more I learned about these things, the more I understood myself a little bit better and also created more possibility. Then I studied martial arts because of the bullying and also I just really felt called to do so and started studying. I did judo for a little while when I was younger, and then I did taekwondo, and then I eventually got into a system of karate that I've stuck with up till now. And when I got my black belt, at that point in time, I started creating this level of success. So my level of self-love, self-concept, self-esteem was low, like a 4 out of 10. And when I started creating success in the martial arts world, I had a new experience. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I can do things. I've been told I can't do things, but perhaps I can. Then at college, I was introduced to a therapist. And all these things started unlocking things within myself. And I started creating a new level of validation and how I viewed who am I. And that was really important. I really defined that myself as someone who could do something. And then back in the early 90s, I got hired at 3M out of college. My dad said, find someone that is doing the best in your work and then ask them what they did and then go do it. And it was so simple and relevant. I'm like, okay. So I have this guy named Barry. I was at an awards ceremony like in Florida. He got, you know, this award and the trip award and everything else. And I'm like, ooh. I want to learn from. So I went to Barry and I said, what do I need to do? Tell me. He said, well, I'll mentor you. I said, awesome. He said, we're going to talk every week. I said, awesome. You do what I say. And I said, oh, it's awesome. He said, first get a haircut. I was like, oh God. So one of the first things he did, which was really, really cool, he said, we start listening to audios. And I said, okay. He said, so we need to get a tape deck for your car. Go get one. Just get it installed. So I did. And he gave me tapes. Audios, Tom Hopkins, and this other one, Brian Tracy, and Earl Nightingale. And so I started listening to Earl Nightingale and Brian Tracy, and then Tony Robbins. As I listened to these audios, it opened up a whole new realm of like, wow, wait a minute. My thoughts are not just thoughts. They're way more than that. So the more I studied personal development, the more I realized how much easier my life and richer my life became. And I knew that by redefining who I was and why I was here, it just created more possibility in my life. And in a way, though, that I was co-creating, I was working not only within myself, like it goes to the monk manual. One of my favorite questions still in the monk manual is, what is God teaching me? Or what is God, you know, that, something along that line, that question. I want pulling that in on a daily basis now, not on a weekly basis. It's really, really powerful. So that's, in essence, kind of a little bit about my history and my background and where it kind of came to play in relationship to not only how I integrate work within my own life, but also how we do that now with private clients and a lot of the families that we work with.
So you felt what I'm hearing is kind of like a connection, a quiet, almost like hidden connection with God in early age and feeling a certain level of isolation, difficulty, maybe not feeling provided for, taken care of in various capacities. You had that one relationship that was really, in a sense, formative. And that's fascinating to me, actually. You know, it's so common where you see people get interested in matters of, maybe you could just broadly say God, often maybe middle of life to like later in life. It's almost like there's a curve there, like almost a hockey stick curve, right? Where the last few years, very, very few people not asking questions around that. You were able to tap into that from an early age. And it sounds like that's a really important aspect as well, because even this ongoing engagement of what is God doing in my life is something that helps orient and drive you forward. Have you always been someone who's a bit more contemplative, a bit more just aware, kind of like playing at a different frequency that you feel like you picked up on some of those things? Or was it just a gift of sorts? Because I think there's a lot of people who actually want to even feel like that, feel a certain connection with God, but maybe don't even find it as accessible as you just described it. And I don't want to put words in your mouth either.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you know, there are times when I felt more or less connected until I really started developing a more of a practice, more of a devotional practice, something that allowed me to create that space. And I think that's the big ingredient that I realize now that it's like one of those things, Steve, where you have an experience and you're not really sure, you're unconscious about how it happened. And through time, through the studies I've done and the people who I've seeked out to mentor me, like I'm the kind of guy who like, I want to work with them. And I don't want to just go to their class. I want to work with them privately. Like I'll go and I'll invest the money to have that experience with people, or I'll ask them to spend time with me, because I really, truly value what I can learn, not only to integrate for me, but how some things that I can help with others to create a higher level of peace and connection. Because I really believe it's really important. I've had a few clients, two in this year, who both in their 50s, male, who both got cancer in the last 2 years, both passed away this year from the cancer. And one was brain cancer and one was colon cancer. And both of them asked me, I want you to coach me through this to the end. And I'm like, okay, I'd be honored to. So you hire a coach to help you with your business, help you be more balanced in your life, all these other things. And they're asking me to coach them in the process of dying. It was pretty deep, man, because it was a gift to me in a lot of ways. You know, sitting with folks, spending time with them and just listening, what's on their mind, what's important to them. One of the two individuals, actually, they had had a spiritual practice as a kid, and I'd been working with this person for probably 5 years. The reason they hired me is they sold their companies, and they weren't sure what to do. I'm not sure what to do next. I'm a little lost. Can you help me? And I'm like, okay, sure. So let's get clear. We'll build a frame. I have a process to go through, a hierarchy fulfillment, if you will. We went through all that, and then eventually decided what he wanted to do and do a startup, and we started, you know, through that process. And then he gets colon cancer. And it was really interesting how things shifted along the way in relationship to what matters. But the point I bring it up is the first layer that I have in the hierarchy of fulfillment is spirituality. It's your connection to something greater than myself and answering the question, who am I and why am I here? Those are questions that we can continue to contemplate ongoingly. And I'll do it one time and check the box. But needless to say, he's like, whoo, he really got back into his spiritual practice in a major, major way. Attending church, he was a Catholic, and he got really involved. And it was really beautiful. And he thanked me later in, like, he said to me, in his last year of life, and he was in tears, he said, Chris, this year has been the richest year of my life. In fact, this has been the best year of my life. And I got diagnosed with cancer. I am living my best life. He said, do you know how rich the conversations are I have with people when I go to lunch with them? Because they are thinking in their mind, they may never have lunch with me again. This could be our last lunch. And the love and the presence and the compassion, I have them 100%. In my conversation and the depth that we go, it is just so meaningful. Boy, I sure wish life would have been like this all the time.
You know, it's incredible because it's such a powerful access point or perspective of just being able to be in that position of working with someone through that process, right? I got swept up just in hearing this story because there's something that happens, I think, for people when they're really approaching death. So much falls to the side that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And in some ways, they're not on the other side, but they're kind of standing on the bridge. They have a different perspective, and they can point out certain things that just from where we're standing, we can't. And I imagine that's the blessing of working with someone in that. Like, we know that at the end of our life, certain things are going to be more important than they probably are to us right now. But we can still kind of busy ourselves with all the things that have to get done, right? We can still be looking at, hey, how do I go and save money over here, do this or that? And that's not wrong, right? We have to attend to the tasks of our life, but there's something so clarifying when death enters into the picture. Now, you had alluded to some changes taking place, and I know that maybe there's certain things you can't share too explicitly or specifically, but what were some of the changes that you saw occurring that opened up this renewed sense of richness? Because my sense is, and this has been my experience in life, it's like the richness is always there. It's not that the world changes around us. We just all of a sudden open up the aperture, right? We let a little bit more of the light in. What was it that you witnessed in those journeys? How did it change them?
So the real key is all this stuff, what really isn't important truly does fall away. It moves off the table because it's not important anymore. It just isn't. And you know what? It never really was important. Mm-hmm. We got hung up and swept away. And what the richness that happens is, A, you wake up and you know that today could be the last day. And if it's not my last day, this could be the last day that I'm truly functioning 100%. Tomorrow, I may not have all my cognitive function. So today, I feel like I can operate pretty well and I'm alive. And knowing like we're all mortal, but because I've had this experience that someone's told me that my mortality is limited, and I've had that experience and I've labeled it, I'm now living in it as a paradigm. And perhaps we could learn from that paradigm a little bit. How much am I immersed? One of my themes this year was immersive. I wanted to be fully present or immersed in whatever it is that I'm doing. You go surfing, you know, you're wakeboarding, playing like singles tennis. These are things that like are very active. You know, I don't climb ice, but ice climbers, like they're so in that, like their mind can't think of anything else. They're truly absorbed in it. But when we have conversations with people, even in a podcast episode, there are a few times I'm like, oh, there goes my mind. Oh, got to bring it back. Keep that thing on a leash. But how well can we be present with someone? How, and not only in my mind, Stephen, but in my heart, our body sees, our body takes in information. Can we be fully present? Can we connect it? And so many of us, especially as our high achievers, I remember Wyatt, my NLP mentor, when I started studying with him, and he's like, you know, you need to be more in your body, not in your head. And I was like, what? I'm like, what the hell does that mean? You know, I'm like, huh? Yeah, I didn't get it at that time. Mm-hmm. And because I've got this fire mind and it's really good at solving problems, but it doesn't help me connect. I have to create space to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What you're describing, that listening to the body, that understanding the body, it's interesting because I see in the monk manual community, a lot of the people who come to the monk manual, they're high achieving on some level, and they tend to be people who, for a certain period of time, have tried to grow in intentionality. And I find that it actually attracts a lot of people who have a really robust mental life, right? They read, they listen to things, they're trying to grow. I would wager actually that they err on the side of being very intelligent to hyper intelligent. There's a lot of very smart people in every domain, whether they're an academic or if they're a stay-at-home mom or dad, it doesn't really matter across the board. There's a proclivity towards mental analysis and understanding things. And I think the other side of that is a lot of people experience a disconnection from the body in a sense, like a disconnection from the present, because the body is one of those things that's always in the present. It can't be anywhere else. Our head can be,
right.
I mean, I could be right now 20 years in the future, and I'm just trying to throw out words, right? But I'm not here at all. But my body's here, whether my mind's here or not. And I think that's an issue. Part of the reason I think that's an issue is that's part of my own story. I think I realized at some point in my life, because I had things when I was growing up too that created little T or big T trauma, right? I know sometimes you have enough little T trauma, it turns into big T, right? And
yeah.
I think a lot of people have that. And then you end up realizing kind of your own natural defenses against the world, right? If you're maybe built like a jock or something, maybe you get into sports and you kind of put on a tough guy persona, or you do this or that. Or I think for me, I figured out like, look, my mind works in such a way I can kind of figure things out. Like if I really want to, I can sit back and figure it out. And then it becomes almost a defense mechanism. It becomes a way for us to avoid danger and suffering, which then comes back to this whole idea of when you're confronted with your own mortality is it changes the whole game, because then this whole idea of staying safe is no longer tenable, because you realize like that form of safety doesn't actually exist. It only exists in abstraction. Does it make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I'm with you.
So in your own process towards discovering maybe a deeper richness or living more in the present, has that been something that's always been relatively easy for you? Or is that something that came later on?
No, it came later on, because what ended up happening was, because of my background, I created a bit of a dissociate with our feelings to some degree, because I don't want to feel them. Mm. And that's common with trauma. I mean, I was truly somebody who would go to a party in college and I'd stand against the wall. I didn't drink at all because I didn't want to lose control. So I had a lot of control challenges also. I just didn't want to lose any sense of control of anything. I just wouldn't want to talk to anyone. And it took a bit of an evolutionary process to start to own how I felt and be okay with how I felt and connect. And when I work with leaders and next-gen leaders, some of the work we do, one of the things that is fascinating to me is how often folks will talk about listening and communication and empathy as things to learn as for leadership, because they're really important. If we want to be good leaders, then we want to let people know that we care about them. It's one of the key ingredients. And if you're going to care about someone, then you have to at least build some level of compassion, maybe not empathy, but compassion. How do I create compassion? But I can't create compassion if I cannot manage my own neurology. And I'm in my head, and I'm stressed, and I have anxiety. How am I going to experience and feel what you feel? Which is what compassion is. But no one teaches that. I'm going to say no one, I'm generalizing, but typically it's not taught. People talk about what to do, but they don't talk about how to do it. Part of the road that I've been on is learning how to quiet the mind, learning how to feel presence. I love the Matrix movie for the analogy of the red pill, blue pill, because I think it's just brilliant. The whole premise behind the movie is that there's two realities. And the other way to look at it is there's the movie, and we're in a movie, and we're not even conscious we're in a movie, and we're just playing out our role. And then there's the idea of like, well, maybe I'm in the movie, but maybe I can also direct and produce the movie and step out of the movie at times, right? How do I look at how I'm living my life? And I think for a lot of folks, we're so much in the movie, we're sleepwalking. And I look at my work as to wake up people who are sleepwalking, or for the folks that are kind of half awake, wake them up further to remind them like, whoa. I am kind of co-creating. The Monk Manual is beautiful because twice a day, it gives me the ability to step outside my life to look back in and just have reflection time. Three priorities, right? Review the day. What am I looking forward to? All these really beautiful questions, right? What am I thankful for? What am I grateful for? I can practice gratitude. It's all framed out for us. The Monk Manual, and I've got a lot of clients that put on it. It's a tool to remind us that there is a red pill and a blue pill, and we have a lot more control. But how do we plug into this, getting clarity in our truth and out of these illusions of what society perhaps has been programmed? To me, it's as a process of creating space, connecting with the divine, and then also cleaning our shit up so that, like, it's almost like our screen or our window, so we can see out more clearly into what reality really is, and then navigating from there. It's an ongoing process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that image, because I do think that that's a bit of what the experience has been like for me. That image of, look, like there's this world out there, and a lot of the grime or sludge we see is actually the stuff that's on our own window. So we're not able to actually see clearly out, or it's like it's fog out there and we just have a hard time making out the objects. And so if we can thin the fog, that can help quite a bit. But there's another level to it. And I want to hear your experience with this. In that, I think a lot of individuals, when they're faced with that red pill, blue pill dynamic, right? When they start seeing, there's a lot of illusion here. Like, there's a lot of people around me who are just kind of living out a movie. They're just kind of going through the script. There can be a feeling of almost stepping outside of cultural norms, which is in some ways inspiring. But at the same time, it can feel really isolating.
Yeah.
Right? It can feel almost like, well, does anybody really understand this? Like, does this mean I'm going to be alone? I'm going to be the only person who's thinking like, this doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. Well, how are you able to resolve that? Because I want to, and I don't want to even say it's totally resolved. I think that's probably a long-term process, but I do want to name, I think something that's always attracted me to you since the first time we talked is you do speak and operate. And I know you're not perfect. None of us are perfect, but
no,
there is an authentic like place of center that I see you operating out of. When you talk, you're not speaking from like a theoretical, this is not true to me, let me go parrot something back. You're speaking from a place of genuineness, right? Which means you touch something. That's always the case, I think, when people are operating from that center. What was that like for you? And was that a difficult process of being able to actually accept that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because like, dude, when I used to talk to people, I remember this. I would be talking to you. And in that same conversation, I got this loop going on and be like, what's Steve thinking? Oh, man, is he thinking I'm cool right now? Like, I would just be like, I shouldn't have wore this shirt. Oh, I mean, I was so crazy in high school. I remember like I would pack like these breath mints and I would like literally knowing when I was changing classes and what girls I might see at lockers on the way, I would make sure I was activated so that I smelled good. That's how much energy I was putting into how I showed up and where I was at. It was, it was exhausting. It was freaking exhausting. Mm-hmm. And as I worked more on myself, what was the shifts? It was just incremental. It wasn't like, oh, that one day, boom, I realized, oh my God. Through the work that I've done, I don't do that anymore. I really honestly don't. And maybe sometimes now to a fault. It's not that I'm not plugging in and paying attention. Someone told me the other day, he's like, I can't remember what they said, something about my witnessing or my listening or how I pay attention to things. I'm like, oh, you have no idea. Because at times, I can pick up a lot really fast off of somebody. At times, it's not really my business to dig in that deep with someone, if you will. But it was a process of evolution. I really do appreciate the compliment. I don't think much about it. But I do live as much as I... Trust me, I'm not perfect. I still work with a coach on mindset. I still work with someone on strategy. I have two separate people that I invest in. I have a personal trainer I work with. So that's three. But I'm constantly investing. And I probably never will turn it off. It's a few thousand dollars a month. Some people are like, oh my God, you'd spend... I'm like, yeah, what the hell? It's built into the cost structure of the business. It's really important. There's no better investment I can do than an investment in myself in regards to my thinking and how I show up. So I self-witness quite a bit without judgment, Stephen. No judgment. Just how are we showing up? How are we being present? Can we accept responsibility for how we're showing up and participating? We have a 9-year-old daughter now, and that's been really, really interesting having that experience of going like, you know, I'm losing my patience and I'm really, really, truly trying hard not to. And she's a real strong soul, really strong. You know, and she's like, well, you know, you can't tell me what to do. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I can't, you know? I said, I'm just here to help with the consequential side. If it's safety related, I'm going to enforce it somehow. If it's non-safety related and, you know, it's around, you want to stay up later and you're making yourself stay up later and you're choosing to do that and you're going to be tired tomorrow. There's consequences to that. You're going to be tired or tomorrow. You know, there things are going to happen. I'm not going to participate in you staying up later. So there's pieces I can do, but you need to accept responsibility. I need to accept responsibility. I need to own my emotions. And it's harder for her to do so because, well, she's 9. So it is what it is. Mm-hmm. But I would try to teach that. Let's be thoughtful to plug in and pay attention to what we're feeling. Mm-hmm. Feelings don't come out of nowhere. They come out of pictures in our head. They come out of our inner dialogue. And they come out of our physiology. Those are the three places feelings come from. So I've learned that. And now how can I share that with her as well? But what I say is my life is a constant ongoing process of personal discovery. Even tonight when I lead karate and I have a class, I'll ask students, what did you witness from doing that form? What did you notice about yourself? What were you paying attention to? I'll ask questions like that. Why? Because I want them to be more self-aware. I don't want them just to follow something to do it right or memorize the movement. I want them to plug in at a higher level? Because no one's going to ask them that. Stephen, no one's going to ask them that tomorrow. Like, where do they hear that? What are you experiencing right now? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. What's going on in your body? What's going on in your head? When you did that, did you pay attention to what your feet were doing? Well, let's try paying attention to your feet. Just give that a whirl.
I have this image that came to me. I don't remember the context for this, but I had this image of almost like a, if you were to imagine kind of like there's an elevator that goes from your head down to your heart. I can actually notice if it's maybe 10 floors, like where I'm operating from, like which floor at a particular time. And I can notice when I'm really in my head. When I'm in my head, it's like being at the top of a, I don't know, like a watchtower, right? I'm looking out, I'm trying to survey, I'm trying to figure out how everything needs to be moved around. It's kind of a little bit more protective. When you get in...
I can feel you. Did you notice how your energy just shifted there into how
did,
you were talking?
It did, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know why I'm actually bringing this up is because I'm noticing even in our conversation, you talk about the attunement. I'm attuning a bit to your own energy in place. And I can just sense, this is what I was even talking about before, is like you're operating a little bit closer to that heart space.
Yeah.
So it actually by nature kind of brings me down a bit. I would argue most podcasts, when you're listening to people talk, maybe if it's between friends, it's really kind of intimate. Maybe they're in that heart space. Most podcasts, it's all head stuff. It's all like, let's talk about this, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
There's nothing inherently wrong with that either.
Yeah.
But I'm noticing, like, yeah, there's this going down, right? Even developing that model helps me see something I didn't otherwise see. And because of that, I can check in and almost be like, okay, I'm right here right now. I'm maybe right in my throat or something, right? And I can kind of descend down. And my experience does change.
Yeah.
I start feeling things. There's a richness. It's kind of like there's a thickness to life that starts emerging in that heart space, right? It just feels more...
Yeah.
There's just something there. It's juicier of sorts.
Yeah. So granted... I've gotten to know you. We've had conversations, and I care and love you. So, like, I really want to help you. Like, regardless, you know, I do, because I've reached out to you before and said, "Hey, man, anything I can do, let me know." And I feel called to do that at times with folks in particular, but I try to show up with that same energy of love for as many people as I can be present for, and that's the difference that you feel.
What I love about this is the concept behind the show is around potency. And a lot of times when you think of a potency, it's like, okay, well, how high of alcohol content is this thing? Or it's kind of like the potency of acid, or it's something that really is about the power of it. But what's inspiring to me is the idea that, in a sense, all we can be is ourselves. And... that I really think the legacy of our lives is not the goals we accomplish. Like, that's the material. That's the stuff that we can work towards. And it gives us a way to kind of develop ourselves and pour ourselves out a bit and find meaning in the different things we're contributing to, create some good. But ultimately, the highest good I think we create is the potency we bring of ourself in every moment, right? Like, the Chris Yonker that is you, like, most fully, it's there, right? It's been there the entire time. And I believe that that's a really good thing, right? Like, the Stephen Lawson that is me is actually a great good. And it's something that inherently, if I'm able to actually bring that fully to the world, it doesn't change the world in terms of some gigantic revolution, but it does something where then when you're in the presence of that, it brings you in touch with, like what you're saying, love, right? Like, there's love inherently in that full version of ourselves, that deepest part of ourselves. And when we show that, there's like a magic quality we have when we show up in that way. I would even argue that when you're in that state, it's inherently healing.
Mm. Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's by nature.
Yeah.
That sort of relationship, being in a place of deep connection, it's like getting a soul massage.
Yeah. Well, there's so much correlation to how we manage our nervous system, how we manage stress, how we're able to sleep, do the things that are necessary to heal our bodies, like you said, really, truly. And there's a lot of folks we can all study who are in that. You know, Deepak, I haven't read it yet, but Deepak just released a book this month, Quantum Body or something like, but it's around quantum physics, it's around science, it's around health and well-being and the correlation between all these things.
Yeah, and what's funny too is we've been talking about the body, right? And how important that is and how paying attention to that is. And for a long period of my life, it was almost as if I was entirely disembodied. Like now, I'm actually aware when I feel low energy, right? When you were just calling out before, like how you could tell my state actually changed, I was kind of like partially aware of it as it was happening. But then the minute you said it, it was like I could immediately register it. But if you would have told me that, say, 10 years ago, I would have been like, what is this guy talking about? My state? Like, what is he?
Yeah, where's that?
What is he?
I live in New York, in Buffalo, man. I know where I live. What are you talking about?
Can you like sketch that out? Like put that in a sentence or something for me? But now I know, right? And that's what's so incredible is I think when you start getting wins, and when you were saying it was a process, part of it is like you start discovering aspects of yourself that once you see it, it's hard to unsee. Like you still need practices to keep you coming back to the things.
Yes, that's right.
But there's just so many things that you're not aware of. Like I would even argue what's interesting is like in a relationship, like a spousal relationship or any sort of serious relationship, but it could also be with kids. There's people who you talk about like this idea of kind of being more awake. There's people who can really fall asleep entirely in that relationship until all of a sudden it gets really, really bad. And then they're like, how did this happen?
Right.
Well, it's been that way the whole time.
Yeah.
Like this person has been clearly struggling for a very long time.
Yeah.
And now you're just seeing it.
Yeah.
But it's similar to like the body. The body actually does, I think, call out through like emotions and through pain and things like that. But there's a lot of aspects of our life that if we don't actually turn and build the muscle or the awareness, we can have fires going on, little breakdowns in all these areas and have no idea how that's really pragmatically, tangibly changing a lot of our life, like really impacting how we show up each day, our experience, all of these things.
Absolutely. Absolutely true. Yeah.
So one of the difficulties, you were talking about your daughter and you have your own specific story. I think everybody's got a story. I've yet to meet anyone whose upbringing was entirely perfect. And then sometimes when it's close to that, they have to reckon with a whole nother thing, which is like, okay, what do I do when I've been given a lot of opportunity or I have this or I have, you know, there's always things I think we're trying to figure out based upon how we were raised. And one of the difficulties is when you're raising a child, most parents would say that their children are the most important or one of the most important things in their life, but you don't necessarily know how to parent, because all you're doing is you're basically having to go and figure it out. And, and I think that's difficult, but I think what's the real difficulty is in some ways, like the process you're describing, inner work, all this personal growth, development, unless you're working with a coach, you're in a sense trying to like reparent yourself without knowing how to even do that. So what have you found as like effective ways to wayfind through that?
Yeah. I think a lot of what we're saying today or talking about is the difference between doing and being. And when someone might first hear that, they might think they got it. But I don't, you know, I suggest you might think about that or a little deeper. And like I think earlier in my relationship with my wife, we have the most amazing relationship in all aspects. It hasn't always been that way. There's been challenges. And I remember when I'd have challenges and I would go buy tapes or, you know, get audios or get books, and they're all about doing, do this. Okay, yeah, I'm gonna do this, and then she's gonna think I'm an awesome man, or she's gonna think I'm sexy. You know, like this is what I'm gonna do, and it didn't work. It just didn't work because I was like doing, while I'm still being. It's like looking at our lives. How am I aligned with the life I want to live today, and do I feel I'm in progress to how I want to participate? And there's no right or wrong way to live anyone's lives. As long as we're clear on what our core values are and we're living in integrity to what we say our core values are, that's a big check-in. I value family. All right, well, how much time do you spend with family? What kind of experiences do you have with your family? I value my health and well-being. How do you care for your body? Like, let's just check in. These are ways to start creating feedback loops in for ourselves and our own progress. And as we listen and reflect, I think the other piece of the puzzle is, and this is a harder one, who do I surround myself with? And yes, when we start thinking differently and we realize that most of society is showing up and sleepwalking or in a different mode, it can be challenging. And if you hold the space long enough and continue to say, okay, I'm going to keep opening up and walking this walk and owning my truth, and it might be shifting some friendships. Perhaps it might be shifting some Instagram feeds I follow. It might be shifting some shows I choose to watch. It might be shifting books I read, you know, how I fill my head with thoughts and ideas and have conversation. And the good news is, Stephen, the good news is we are in a world right now that there's a stronger movement of developing stronger states of consciousness and higher levels of thinking and being. It's becoming more common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's easier in some ways to find a community in that space. Although I would argue that one of the difficulties a lot of people experience is communities up until the recent past had been largely formed around maybe national identity, religious identity, political identity. There's a lot less institutional affiliation that occurs. And so a lot of the community affiliation, even more secular community groups, there's just a lot less affiliation. And so we're in this really pregnant time, I think, where there are a lot of difficulties sometimes finding some form of like traditional community, but there's a lot of new models and also just a lot of supply in the sense that there's a lot of people who are really, I think, sincerely trying to work it out and find their way. And I'll tell you, you know, one thing that I wasn't planning on making this personal, but when I look back at even the last few years of my life, one of the things that held me back is at a certain point, I actually was kind of concerned about, well, you know, if I really did what I thought was right, and if I really maybe even said what I think, or I maybe live with that integrity, then I don't know, like, am I going to be a lone wolf? Like, will I be able to even find that tribe? And in a sense, I actually think I've tried to work that out a bit through the Monk Manual, through meeting people like yourself, like those, the people that do exist. And I think that there's, it requires a certain amount of imagination to realize that, yes, some relationships may need to close up or wind down or just have certain boundaries around them. And that can be difficult. But the space that gets created there, like there always are people.
Yeah.
And it's almost like until you can go and believe that and kind of walk into it, that you find that that's the case, right? And that there's a lot of people that feel the same way you do.
Yes, right. Doors will open. Just align yourself with the energy. Doors will open. I mean, I just recently met a really amazing person who's going to be on my podcast, but a friendship very quickly with someone in Japan. You know, come on. Mm-hmm. The only challenge we have is there's only a few hours a day that we can really connect with each other and do Zoom because of the massive time difference. But it's all good. And we'll get together in person at some point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And something I want to highlight tied to that is, you know, a theme in a lot of the conversations I've been having with different individuals for the show is themes around meaning, things around inspiration. And I think one of the gifts of living in and through spiritual practice, or maybe seeing yourself as part of a larger whole, seeing that you're maybe a part of a larger symphony of sorts, or that there's just something larger than you, but yet you are important in that mix and connected in that mix. I think the thing that becomes really exciting then is then when you make a friend or acquaintance in Japan, you start thinking, man, this is so interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder what's happening here.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder, I wonder what's next here.
Yeah.
Because you start to see, like, that's always happening.
Right. And I'll kind of close out with this one, because I think it's a really profound point. We're co-creating. And if we start going like, yeah, let's just see what happens, or like, just play with what shows up. Or it's like, where do I feel pulled? I feel this intuition to go here, or I'm going to reach out to so-and-so, or, and it happens to me so often now. Like every day there's something, and whether it be I thinking of someone and then they just sent me an email like asking, like, oh yeah, I'm actually just responded to your email, didn't even know you sent the, we just say now, oh, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like, you know, I'm arrogant and of course, it's like, no, I'm just paying attention to God's participation in the divine plan here. And though I'm not in full control, I am co-creating. I just trust in the timing. I trust in what's occurring. And at times I really have to practice patience. But it's all here.
Mm-hmm. Chris, this is so good. And I'd love to talk with you for a few more hours. We'll probably have you back out at some point because I think we're just scratching the surface here. Maybe you could share a bit about who it is specifically that you work with and where people can find more about you and your work.
Sure. ChrisYonker.com is the website. That's the best resource. The work we're doing, almost all of our clients are with privately held companies. and or family businesses. So 75% of the clients we work with are family owned. And we're typically working on harmony, we're working on next gen development, and we're working on succession. You know, and then I say succession, it could be 5 years, 10 years down the road. That's where the next gen development is so important. And what we're working on is holistically developing the next gen and helping people own their truth so they can have more harmony in the family and in the business.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Chris, and thank you for just being you.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Potent. If you'd like to learn more about Chris Yonker and his work at the Center for Conscious Living and Fulfillment, please visit chrisyonker.com or check out his podcast, The Secret Thoughts of a CEO, available on all major podcast platforms. I'd like to end each episode by encouraging you, the listener, to identify something from today's episode that you'd like to change or incorporate into your life as a result of what you heard today. Don't let ideas stay ideas. Find one small action you can take starting today to set yourself on a path to a fuller life. If you haven't already, I invite you to subscribe to this podcast and leave us a review. This is a free way you can support this program and help us reach more individuals who are seeking to live a fuller life. You can also follow us on YouTube and Instagram. Links to both are available on our website, thepotentpod.com. And now, some inspiration for the week ahead. If someone is able to show me that what I think or do is not right, I will happily change, for I seek the truth, by which no one was ever truly harmed. It is the person who continues in his self-deception and ignorance who is harmed. Marcus Aurelius. Until next time, wishing you all the best.